Away from your radio? Listen to Federal News Radio directly on your desktop. Click the red Listen Now button near the top of the federalnewsradio.com homepage.
This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're going to be talking about counterintelligence and counterterrorism. What's going on in the world right now as it relates to these threats that's happening? There's so many different threats that's happening against the United States and also other Western countries. We want to talk about that today. We're also going to be talking about a new book that's coming out that is an interesting read. It's called Chasing Shadows. It's about a special agent's lifelong hunt to bring a Cold War assassin to justice. And the author of this book is Fred Burton, and he's also the person who's going to be talking about all these different threats around the world. He's a vice president of intelligence, or vice president of Stratfor, which is strategic forecasting, a company that's called what's it called, Fred? You guys are called the private CIA. Is that what you guys are called?
Yes.
You know, they do a good amount of work dealing with strategic forecasting and intelligence gathering and dealing with a lot of the threats that's going on around the world. He's also former director of the counterterrorism unit at Department of State's Diplomatic Security Service. Is that right, Fred?
Actually, the deputy director.
I'm promoting you, Fred. I'm giving
well,
you a promotion.
You.
I'm giving you a promotion. So, deputy director of counterterrorism at Department of State, the Diplomatic Security Service. Thank you for coming on Fed Access.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, Fred, you know, we were just talking about the threats that's going on around the world. I mean, given the dynamics that, you know, we're dealing with and all these different things that's happening, what do you see? Because you look at this every day. What do you see are maybe the top? And let's maybe break this down between counterintelligence and counterterrorism. But what do you see as maybe the first counterterrorism threats that we're facing around the world? Is it just Al-Qaeda, or has things expanded?
Well, it's certainly the lone wolf threat, the Al-Qaeda-inspired individual. As you're looking at this from a counterterrorism perspective domestically, what really troubles me, though, Derek, is the unfolding events in the Middle East with countries like Egypt, Jordan, Morocco, Algiers. These are countries that for many, many years had a very good intelligence relationship with the U.S. intelligence community, as well as the Israeli Mossad, though very quietly. There was a high degree of stability there and pretty effective liaison between all the different agencies that are in play, and we most certainly need to throw in the British MI6, their intelligence service as well. And what's worrisome to me is, as these countries start to look at stabilizing their internal chaos, for example, state security in Egypt, there's less time to focus on things that are of national security importance to the United States. And the tremendous support that we get or used to get from countries from a foreign liaison perspective cannot be underestimated. You understand this. Your listeners that are in the community here in Washington certainly understand this, that we really need that foreign liaison intelligence to stay ahead of all the terrorism threats that are out there. And then, of course, you have Iran just setting back and waiting and possibly throwing a little kerosene on these fires of discontent here and there. So any kind of breakdown in that foreign intelligence liaison efforts greatly impact on our national security.
You know, with that being the case, with these countries in a state of unrest, are we looking at a point where we may have to start all over and build these relationships, or are we looking at a possible, because, you know, people are getting concerned about the Muslim Brotherhood, they're getting concerned about certain Islamic extremists who are taking over in certain areas of the country, or are we looking at a complete dissolving of our relationships with some of these countries as we look at Egypt, we look at Yemen, we look at all these other areas?
It's going to depend on a country-by-country perspective, but what happens is when you have that kind of chaos inside one of these Middle Eastern countries, there's less time that they have to focus on intelligence collection requirements that we may pose to them as the United States. So there's less priority on collection on jihadists or individuals that are of concern to us, and rightfully so, based upon that nation state's concern. So invariably, we become, you know, at the bottom of the ladder when it comes to intel collection efforts. So, and that is somewhat troublesome when you look at just the scope of countries that are involved today with these uprisings.
You know, you talked about the lone wolf with these uprisings and maybe some, you know, Al-Qaeda inspired and even they talked about Libya. I know the FBI had been really kind of, you know, talking to Libyans in America to kind of see if anybody had any, if there were possible sales in this area. Is that what we're concerned about, kind of that sale, or that maybe individual who is looking at things in the Middle East and thinking that, you know, the West or the United States is influencing either uprisings or having some kind of undue influence in these areas, and so therefore they are provoked in order to attack one of our, you know, either a government building or a soft target?
Obviously, that's always a concern. And when you think about this, too, in context, I think the as you focus on Libya, and I've conducted a lot of investigations on Libyan-backed terrorism over the years, most notably the Pan Am 103 bombing over Lockerbie, Scotland,
right, that
killed a few of our personnel. The infrastructure inside the United States for specific Libyan-backed terrorism is not really there. It's more of a concern for Europe, primarily the UK, Italy, and France. So I don't worry directly of blowback here as a result of what's taking place in Libya. What I'm more concerned about is maybe some Libyan-inspired or Libyan-backed kind of lone wolf that could take it upon himself to lash out in some capacity.
Right. I was looking at a certain situation in Belarus and other areas where we just recently had a train, a bombing on a train. Somebody put something under a seat or something like that and killed about 12 people, injured hundreds of people. You know, with that being the case, and, you know, we got the Olympics that are coming up next year in London in 2012. Are you concerned about these kind of soft targets, like, you know, metro buses? I mean, we had bombings in London with the buses, trains, and in Spain and Madrid with those scenarios. There's so many different kind of attacks that have happened in other places that have not happened here. Is that a concern that eventually that this will come to America?
I think so. We have had the subways targeted before in New York City as well as in Washington, D.C., and mass transportation is the Achilles heel. And, you know, the facts are that nobody really wants to admit that it's basically impossible to secure mass transportation.
Right.
Specifically buses and subways inside the United States. Now, there are some...
Are we operating off a false sense of security, Fred? I mean, are people, you know, I mean, I ride the Metro sometime and people are kind of oblivious and they're into their own world. Are we really operating and thinking that it's safe when it's not?
I think for the most part that most people that are riding the subway don't have a high degree of situational awareness and aren't looking for those kinds of behaviors that could be indicative of, you know, the individual that leaves the knapsack behind or the suicide bomber kind of behaviors. I know it frightens the FBI to death when you start thinking about the possibility as well as just the symbolism as you look at the D.C. subway system at stops like the Pentagon or Arlington National Cemetery. I mean, that's a, you know, a very, very symbolic, vulnerable target set that, that would certainly resonate, across, the Arab Peninsula. And so, I think as you think about this in context, you can't rapidly screen or look for, small improvised explosive devices on just the volume of travelers that are riding the public transportation systems today.
Right, right. Do you feel, I mean, given the terrorist threat, and so what I'm hearing, you know, from you, Fred, is that the threat is still there. It's not, you know, it's, I mean, it has not, even though Al-Qaeda has been dealt maybe certain blows here and there, I mean, that threat is very much so real in the United States and other places, and we cannot let our guard down. I mean, is that what I'm hearing from you?
Absolutely, and I think the technology, some of the surveillance systems that at least the D.C. subways are putting in place is a step in the right direction. New York has been kind of leading the edge here for many, many years after 9/11. But if you think about it in context of how do you find that needle in the haystack, that really becomes the challenge. It's not a collection issue, Derek, meaning we have the assets to be able to collect more information than we need with human intelligence, signals intelligence, ELINT. What we lack is the ability to find that needle in the haystack, that individual that could be out there planning that kind of attack.
Right, right, right. Because many of those people, they're not going to be on either websites or, you know, some of these people get caught. Those people are not talking to people. Those people are very much so isolated and not really, they won't get caught up in a sting operation.
That's right. And in complete fairness to the FBI, they have been doing a wonderful job at catching some of these inspired jihadis that have been lurking on the jihadi websites and thinking about terror plots and doing some very good undercover operations to neutralize these plots. For example, in Dallas, the attempt to blow up the Wells Fargo Bank building.
Right.
So, you know, my hat's off to the Bureau in doing that. Now, again, the suspects have put themselves out there on the net and has enabled the FBI and the intelligence community to find them. The ones that don't put themselves out there is the real challenge.
Exactly. We're talking about counterterrorism, talking about counterintelligence, and we'll be talking about a book called Chasing Shadows, which is an interesting book about Fred's lifelong hunt of a Cold War assassin. We're talking about this on Fed Access. We'll be taking a quick break. I have Fred Burton on the line with me. He's the vice president for STRATFOR, but he's also former deputy director of counterterrorism at the Department of State Diplomatic Security Service. We'll be right back after this break on Fed Access on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
My name is Abe Lincoln, and I've been thinking about this cool place that you can go. It's a website that I speak of called USA.gov. It's government information online, and that's mighty fine. USA.gov. Got questions on your log cabin? Housing answers, yeah, they have them. USA.gov is your official source. Get Social Security info, whatever that is. ID theft prevention tips, because that's your biz. Even changed my address, and I don't mean the Gettysburg. Find government auctions, jobs, apply for student aid. Hey, I wouldn't lie, I'm honest Abe. It's government made easy for the people. Take it from the dude in the stovepipe hat. USA.gov is where it's at. So don't wait 70 years to check it out. And that, my fellow Americans, is what I'm talking about.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Department of Veterans Affairs has come up with a solution for modernizing its electronic health record system, releasing the software to the open source community. VA says it's seeing a lot of innovation around electronic health records in the private sector. It thinks opening up the source code to its Vista software will be the easiest way to incorporate those technologies into VA, while also letting tech companies build on the platform it's already developed. VA uses Vista in almost 1,000 facilities.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology. Information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio. Join me this week for my special guest, Len Wolf, president of The Wolf Group, an international tax and investment advisory firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
As gas prices rise, focus is shifting toward the administration's ambitious clean energy goals. Join AFSEA Bethesda and AFSEA Energy May 4th at the Bethesda North Marriott for the second Energy and the Environment IT Day, featuring EPA, DOE, GSA, NRC, the DOD, NOAA, and Interior. View the impressive speaker lineup and register at AFSEABethesda.com/EEITday. Special thanks to premier sponsors Booz Allen, CGI Federal, DLT Solutions, General Dynamics, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, and platinum sponsors HP and Centurion Research Solutions.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we're talking about counterintelligence. We're talking about counterterrorism. We're talking about what's the impact of all the different world events that's going on. What's the impact on the United States? Is the threat still here? Is the threat still real? And from what we're hearing, it still is. We're talking to Fred Burton. He is the vice president for Stratfor, a strategic forecasting. That's the company, but they do a lot of the work that's similar to the CIA and Department of State and everyone else in terms of forecasting any kind of threats that's going on in the world. He is also the former deputy director of the Department of State's Diplomatic Security Service. Fred, we were talking about counterterrorism threat previously, and we both kind of just said, hey, listen, the threat is still here. People need to be quite aware of what's going on because it has some impact, and this thing could happen here. But in terms of counterintelligence, what is the threat? Is that threat still real here?
Oh, very much so. In our post 9/11 environment, countries like India, Israel, China, Russia have taken advantage of the reprogramming of those FBI assets to the counterterrorism mission, which left huge vacuums there for them to step in. And in essence, you had the bulk of the FBI dealing with counterterrorism. Now, that has stabilized a good deal. And you'll see that the FBI has made several very high-profile arrests of most notably Chinese espionage agents or agents of influence here in the United States. And the challenge there is the Chinese have so many different intelligence operatives to throw at us. It's really a very difficult job for the FBI to stay ahead of it, just simply from a manpower perspective.
With that, and you kind of, you know, really touched on it in a really great way, because people hear about India, they hear about Israel, people hear about China, and they kind of say, oh, that's an obvious counterintelligence threat. But they also hear about people who are supposed to be, you know, our allies. You know, what's the threat coming from there before we go into maybe the more obvious ones?
Well, you have to remember, there are no friendly intelligence services.
Mm.
And each nation is going to protect their own interests, and that's what intelligence agencies do. They steal from each other. They get information that they possibly can through any means available. You look at countries like Israel, they have a very, very aggressive foreign counterintelligence collection apparatus in play, where they're trying to look at emerging technology, weapons technology. You look at a country like China, and I find this fascinating, Derek, in doing some analysis on this. The Chinese have moved a lot of their intelligence collection efforts into academic think tanks, basically cover companies,
right.
Utilizing professors and academics as not only talent spotters, but if you think about it in a context of you're an academic invited to various symposiums around the world, you can hobnob. It gives you perfect cover for action. where you can go collect business cards, visit with people, and travel. So that's the real challenge when you start looking at some of these Chinese think tanks around the world.
And so what can have happened is that they can either embed themselves possibly into U.S. universities. You know, I've read some reports about, you know, there's a concern about students coming in and, you know, the long term mole, the person who's, you know, embedded for years and, you know, going to events and getting exposure. Are those are the things that we need to be concerned about?
Absolutely. And then if you think about it in context of, remember, these kinds of spotters that may be in place at various universities around the country, their job is to identify that student that is destined for U.S. government jobs, either State Department, CIA, FBI, DOD, whatever, and follow them and follow that career. And all of us are like that. Who doesn't take a call from your old professor that may need a favor? So it's really a brilliant strategy on the part of the Chinese. And then as you step outside of our country, where it then falls into the bailiwick of the CIA and other foreign counterintelligence organizations, you have to depend upon, again, your foreign liaison to keep tabs on, you know, who that Chinese spotter is in Singapore or London or Canberra, and who are they talking to and where are all those kids going?
You know, do you think that student, you know, because, you know, there are a number of American students who travel overseas and who, you know, go, whether it be Oxford or they go to Taiwan or, you know, a number of different places that you're kind of mentioning. And like you said, they're kind of being looked at. Do you think that there are students are very much unaware that they're being targeted? And do we need to do something a little bit different? I don't know about scaring people, but do we need to really kind of educate people that you really need to be concerned about the counterintelligence threat?
I think so. I think that would be a very prudent measure. I'm not aware of any programs like that. Now, obviously, if you're a dependent of a State Department employee or the child of a Foreign Service officer, you're going to have those kinds of defensive briefings, so to speak, on things to look out for and those kinds of things. But your average kid that's going abroad that comes from a family that has nothing to do with the U.S. government or the intelligence community really doesn't know the vulnerability. We deal with that every day at Stratfor with our company. There's many multinational corporations that are unaware of their vulnerability when they're operating and they're traveling and the concerns for just safeguarding their basic laptop.
Right. You know, an article just pulled up while we're talking, Fred, about kind of China and you know, they're doing some espionage, just as a matter of fact, as we were speaking and talking about the cyber spying and the cybersecurity threat. You know, what are we looking at? I mean, we've seen Epsilon get tapped by hackers. We've seen a number of different companies who have been very much so targeted, and hackers are trying to break into their systems and dig down data. The FBI just caught a few or tried to break down a couple of these networks. But how real is that threat?
Oh, it's very real. When you can apply the assets of a intelligence service against a specific target, whether that be your radio station, our company, or a multinational corporation, you have no defense capability in many ways. Meaning, if the Russian SVR, the new KGB, the Chinese intelligence service, the Iranian intelligence service, if they want to target you, there's very little you can do. And if you have operations in those countries, and you log on to the network from where you are, you pretty much have opened up the kimono and given access to that host government intelligence service to take whatever it is they want.
So I mean, you're kind of scaring me, Fred, because you're saying, listen, there's really no protection. I mean, you know, there's at a point where, you know, we talk about this, but if they want to target you, you may not know, you may be oblivious they are targeting you. And then two, we don't necessarily have a lot of means to protect ourselves from that either counterintelligence threat or the cyber threat.
That's correct, meaning you're back to the human condition, meaning that individual taking personal responsibility to make sure that they're very safe with their laptops. They look at where they're located and where they're logging in from. If you're that company that has those employees that are working out of China, for example, do you have the internal capability and IT systems in place to firewall those off? Where is your research and design operations? I know many companies that we deal with have a lot of their research and development behind very confidential firewalls, and they don't give access to that for employees that are overseas. Having said that, I know a lot of companies that do a lot of R&D work in foreign countries, and obviously if you're doing it there and you're getting access to a foreign employee into that facility, that's certainly a security vulnerability.
And the threat is not just for people who are dealing with maybe national, you know, like government contractors, but the threat is, you know, like you said, academic institutions. It could be a major corporation or even a small corporation. I mean, everybody needs to be quite aware that they could be used as possibly something, a pedestal to step on and then kind of propel them into trying to get information from.
That's right. And let me give you a case example. The Israelis, what they like to do is target those companies that are in emerging technologies that are designing that new widget that's going to have a military application that they know will eventually make its way into the Pentagon or the DOD or be applied.
Wow.
But you get to them early on before all that material and equipment becomes classified government technology.
And they may even put some money behind it. They may be an angel investor. They may be some venture capitalist fund or something like that.
Very well could be. Absolutely.
Wow. The threat is real. We're talking to Fred Burton. He's the vice president of Strat4, which does strategic forecasting of a number of different threats, whether it be intelligence, counterintelligence, cyber threats, anything that's going on around the world. He's also the former deputy director of counterterrorism, the Department of State, the Diplomatic Security Service. We'll be talking about his book that's coming out, what is already out, I should say, called Chasing Shadows. When we return after this break, you listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The ComSatCom report, provided by Hughes.
My unit needs to be able to transmit critical information quickly and reliably while deployed. We must have the flexibility to deploy mobile forces fast as we adapt to changing conditions in our environment. Only satellite can support real-time communications everywhere in the field, whether in the air, on the ground, or at sea.
Hughes provides advanced communications on the move solutions with global coverage. Our solutions meet U.S. government security requirements, including FIPS and TRANSEC, and operate on multiple bands and waveforms. Hughes products comply with open, commercial standards, enabling easy integration with existing systems. Our team of highly skilled and cleared engineers stands ready to work with you to meet your mission requirements.
To learn more about Hughes technologies and contract vehicles, visit today's complete ComSatCom report on federalnewsradio.com or visit Hughes on the web at defense.hughes.com.
Here's to you, doctors. After all, yours is the very first face all of us see. You're who all of our mothers hope will someday grow up to be. It's you who we run to with a sniffle, a fever, or the odd case of mesenteric lymphadenitis. You fix our broken bones. You mend our broken hearts. You help us with everything from our allergies to, well, our zits. And though it may seem we sometimes don't appreciate all that you endure to keep us well, the endless years of schooling, the 14-hour shifts, the vending machine coffee, or actually having to read medical journals, we do appreciate you. Because when we're feeling our worst, we can count on you to give us your best. You're our healers. You're our heroes. You're our doctors. So from all of us to all of you, thanks. Kaiser Permanente. May you live long and thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Today's Insight Report is provided by Deloitte.
Changes in the way that government agencies conduct their operations today increases the vulnerability to insider exploitation. Minimizing the risk of insider threats calls for a more comprehensive approach that includes workforce, cybersecurity, infrastructure, and physical security, as well as information management. Download Deloitte's perspective at Deloitte.com/US/insider threat. Deloitte.com/US/insider threat.
Today, you're tasked with protecting America's networks from cyber attack, training the next generation of cyber top guns, keeping sensitive data safe and secure, and getting to your daughter's soccer game by 6. If you're in government, your cyber to-do list is challenging. Turn to Deloitte. We have the people, insight, and experience to help you address pressing cyber issues and help government help America. Insights and opportunities at Deloitte.com/federal.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? If a tree falls in the forest and no one is around, does it make a noise? Yep.
Be like the 4 million who switched to GEICO last year, and you too could start saving money. For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com to see how much you could save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
If you know the symptoms and get the facts, you'll know the signs of a heart attack. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if it sounds familiar, call 911.
Pain in your neck, chest,
arms, or jaw,
shortness of breath.
Please tell us more. Cold sweats and nausea, tiredness.
It's time to take it
serious. Back pain, stomach pain, shortness of breath. Cold sweats, nausea, dizziness. If you know the symptoms and heed the signs, you'll be around for a long, long time. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911.
Learn the song that can save your life. Get a free download at womenshealth.gov/heartattack.
Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911. If any sound familiar, call 911.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
911.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been talking about counterintelligence. We've been talking about counterterrorism. We've been talking about the threat to the United States amongst from a number of different players, not only Al-Qaeda, but China, Iran, some of our friends, Israel, and everywhere else who may be spying on us. Some of the other, you know, with Al-Qaeda, there's still the threat of the lone wolf and terrorism. All these are the kind of threats that we're dealing with today. But we're going to kind of take a U-turn and kind of go into another perspective right here. Fred, you wrote this book. We're talking to Fred Burton. Let me just say this. We're talking to Fred Burton. He's a vice president of Stratfor, and he's also the former deputy director of counterterrorism at the Department of State. Fred, you wrote this book called Chasing Shadows, and you had a previous book that we talked about before, Confessions of a Counterterrorism Agent, where you were talking about your days of tracking down terrorists. But with Chasing Shadows, you're going in a little bit of a different direction. Break it down. What's Chasing Shadows about?
Chasing Shadows, the title is actually a chapter from my last book, Ghost, Confessions of a Counterterrorism Agent. And this was a choreographed assassination plot that was put together in 1973 in the Middle East. And a hit team was dispatched to the United States to specifically kill a highly decorated hero of the State of Israel, literally. Colonel Joseph Alon was a highly decorated Israeli Air Force fighter pilot. He also was sent here to the United States to be their military attaché to the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C. He and his wife were at a party in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Drove home late at night, around midnight. The wife goes out of the car, up to the front porch, and out of the bushes steps a gunman who fires 5 shots at Colonel Alon, and he literally dies on the front lawn of the residence there in Chevy Chase in front of his wife and 3 daughters. Gunman slips away into a getaway car and literally vanishes in the middle of the night. It's a case that occurred in my neighborhood. I actually went to school with the victim's oldest daughter at Bethesda Chevy Chase High School.
And, so at that time, you were just a young 16-year-old in high school when you found out about this.
I was. And, again, that was back in the day. There was no internet, no cell phone, no message text capabilities. You basically got your nightly news from the radio or TV, and then you waited for the Washington Post the next day to report what happened. And the case kind of stuck with me. I became a Montgomery County, Maryland police officer, and I worked out of the Wheaton District, and I used to cut through the neighborhood there on my way home to an apartment that I had in Glen Echo, Maryland. And I would drive by and kind of think about the crime and just ponder how the heck did the gunman get away.
Did they think, you know, because a lot of times these cases, when you hear about it on the news, you know, everybody thinks it's just another case of a random, you know, crime, a burglary or just another random shooting of somebody. Is that how it played in the news?
Well, it played in the news very interestingly. Some of the initial statements that came out predominantly from senior Israeli officials were that Arab terrorism was suspected. Everybody thought that this was terrorism. Now, remember, this happens shortly after the Munich massacre, where the Israeli athletes are gunned down at the Olympics. And the Mossad puts together hit teams going after Palestinian terrorists, and the Palestinians are shooting and killing Israeli intelligence officers. Then in July of 1973, when this attack occurred, it's 3 months before the Yom Kippur War, which was basically Israel's 9/11.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
That's where the Israelis dropped the ball on the intelligence that was coming in. And literally almost lost the state of Israel due to the Arab invasion. You go back and you look at the victim. His circle of friends was amazing, Derek. I mean, he knew David Ben-Gurion, the founder of Israel, Moshe Dayan, Peres, Sharon, Rabin. At the time of his murder, Rabin was the Israeli ambassador to the United States. So it was a fascinating time period, too, in the United States. The original FBI case agent came forward and volunteered to help me with this case just went over the kinds of things they were dealing with. They had the Nixon White House was running amok. They had subversive groups from the Weather Underground to the Black Panther Party to Balkan terrorists that were running loose in the United States. So they were just kind of overwhelmed as an organization during that time period.
So they really could not even concentrate on this. When this happened, I mean, you know, they knew that there was a lot more to it, but they really could not dedicate the resources to really pursue his actual killer.
And the FBI in 1973 really was not equipped to deal with this kind of case. Mm. I mean, this is even before you had the ability to even conduct DNA analysis, for example. But what your listeners may find fascinating, especially for those in the Washington, D.C. area, is 3 years after the murder, and again, this was a political assassination, the FBI destroys all the forensic evidence connected to the case.
So, I mean, but why?
We don't know. We don't know. And literally...
Would you think it's maybe, I mean, we're speculating, but do you think it was pressure from either the country of Israel, or was it, you know, was it possible political pressure?
I don't know the answer to that question. That was one of the unknown variables in putting together this book that the original FBI case agent did not know. In fact, he was shocked. I was the first one to tell him that the evidence for his case had been destroyed. The Montgomery County Police cold case detective was as flabbergasted as I was when we started looking at this to learn that all the forensics had been destroyed by the FBI. We don't know why. It's one of those questions that I don't think we'll ever have the answer for.
How did you, and I knew it touched you because, one, you knew her daughter, and then you lived in the neighborhood, and so you kind of, and you developed a relationship with the family in terms of pursuing this case after you became a police officer. You know, fast forward, you got into the Department of State as a diplomatic security, a special agent, and you never let go.
No, my wife thinks I'm crazy, but these are the kinds of cases that I would always want to try to do a little bit more on. In the 80s, I tried to look at it again and got nowhere, literally. There wasn't a lot of information in the police files. We literally had no information in our files. Then the Israeli government was less than cooperative. They pushed back and said, well, look, this was an American investigation. We really didn't look into this at all. The FBI just became a dormant case for many, many years. And the family reached out to me and said, look, can you help me, can you help us solve this case? We're getting no help from anybody. And they were instrumental in solving this case, as well as the Montgomery County Police Department detective and the old FBI agent that was there. We got to the bottom of it. We figured out what happened.
And before you go into that, Frick, I want to cover that in the next segment. But the quick question before we go to break, why this particular colonel? Why was this particular colonel targeted? I mean, was it because he held certain kind of secrets, because he was planning something, he was working with U.S. intelligence? You know, why him?
Well, I think there's two reasons. One, if you go back and look at some of the statements made by the old Palestinian, radical Palestinian guard at the time, they blamed Israeli pilots specifically for bombing Palestinian refugee camps. I think that's first and foremost one of the primary motivations. I also think that it was a brilliant strike at taking out the Israeli military attaché 3 months before the Arabs decided to invade Israel, which disrupted that intelligence exchange, which
right.
goes back to the first part of our conversation about how important foreign intelligence may be.
So basically, in a disruption of taking out somebody on U.S. soil, one, we can get to you anywhere. That's what they're probably saying. And then two, this person has a long term relationship with people, and it's hard to reestablish those relationships with somebody new.
Absolutely.
Wow. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking to Fred Burton. He's the vice president of STRAT4, which is strategic forecasting. They deal with intelligence collection. They deal with the threats around the world. But he's also the former deputy director of counterterrorism at the Department of State, the Diplomatic Security Service, DSS. We're talking about his books, Chasing Shadows, A Special Agent's Lifelong Hunt to Bring Down a Cold War Assassin and Bring Him to Justice. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What skills do strategic leaders need to be successful in the information age? How is the National Defense University's iCollege positioning itself as a global hub for educating, informing, and connecting information age leaders? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and so much more with Dr. Robert Childs, Chancellor of the iCollege at the National Defense University, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
If you're an IT professional looking to advance your career, it's anything but a game. Which is why UMBC is the only university in Maryland to offer graduate programs in human-centered computing, where students apply principles from human-computer interaction, behavioral sciences, and design. UMBC also offers graduate programs in information systems, including an online master's in IS. Get the credential that makes a difference and put some muscle back into your resume. Find out more at is.umbc.edu today.
I love my husband. But I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-Al-Anon.
Here's Jack Pankowski, Director of Manpower, Personnel, and Security at DISA on the Federal Executive Forum on Telework Coop and the Role of Video Conferencing, sponsored by Riverbed.
My vision for the future is that we eliminate the word teleworker. We just start talking about the worker and that, you know, we're not worried about, you know, setting up perhaps artificial goals or numbers and things like that, but that we just focus on the worker with the biggest eye on performance.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
How would you like to increase the productivity of your mobile and teleworkers? Now you can through Riverbed. Their WAN optimization solutions empower mobile workers with high-performance access to email, files, and applications and keep them collaborating in real time. Challenges and delays in working remotely suddenly disappear, and you're complying with telework and COOP mandates. Free your mobile workers to work anywhere with Riverbed. Learn more at riverbed.com. That's R-I-V-E-R-B-E-D.com. Riverbed. Think fast.
I'm like you. I watch the cherry blossoms bloom in the spring. I live amongst monuments and museums. I enjoy walks on the National Mall. Washington, D.C. is my home. This is where I found my career. I am a civilian employee of the United States Coast Guard. That's right, the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard provides me with great workplace training and excellent federal benefits. It allows me to live my life to the fullest. I have time off to travel and have flexible work hours so I can spend time with my family. Coast Guard gives me access to childcare, health and fitness programs, and first-class health insurance, life insurance, and retirement benefits. This is my career. It's how I serve. Find out more about U.S. Coast Guard positions available in D.C. and across the U.S. at CoastGuardCivilian.com/federal. That's CoastGuardCivilian.com/federal. The U.S. Coast Guard is an equal opportunity employer.
Cybersecurity runs deeper than information assurance. It includes mobile security, cyber innovations, forensics, collaboration. That's why last month the Defense Department increased its cyber budget request by nearly $1 billion. And it's why DHS is taking unprecedented steps to assume responsibility government-wide. Join FCA Bethesda on April 29th at the Bethesda North Marriott for its executive breakfast on the latest developments in mission-critical cybersecurity. For speaker lineup and to register, visit FCABethesda.com.
Connect with Federal News Radio wherever you are. Like us on Facebook to see the hottest news stories on your wall. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio. Download our free iPhone app. Just go to the App Store and search for Federal News Radio. And now, connect to the radio station straight from your cell phone. Just call 712-432-6616. Go to federalnewsradio.com and search for social media for details.
Welcome back to Fed Access. We listen to Derek T. Deutsch on Fed Access. We're talking to Fred Burton. He is an author of Chasing Shadows, but beyond that, he's a vice president of STRATFOR, which is strategic forecasting. They deal with the threats around the world. And he's a former deputy director of counterterrorism at the Department of State, the Diplomatic Security Service. Fred, I want to kind of keep us going about this book because there's a lot of interesting things in here. You know, 35 years you have been pursuing the assassin of this Israeli colonel who was assassinated on American soil, who was dealing with intelligence and everything else. We talked about why he was assassinated, possibly. What was your process in terms of bringing him to justice?
Well, I think time in this case actually helped us a bit. We were very successful in identifying some old radical Palestinian sources in the Middle East that was very knowledgeable about the case and, in fact, pointed us in the direction of exactly who did it. And that was instrumental. And, in fact, a couple were very proud. I mean, if you think about it in context, from a terrorism perspective, you know, you're taking out not only an Israeli fighter pilot, but you're killing a military officer in Washington, D.C. Heck of a lot of symbolism there.
Yeah.
One of the amazing things to me is that so little was done over the years, which just is another example of how much terrorism, you know, we were dealing with all through the 70s and 80s and 90s. I'm also very, very proud, Derek, of the fact that the book has been released this week in Israel, a Hebrew version, which also coincides with a film that has been done about this. So that has a
And for them to accept it, you know, for those in Israel to accept it and start learning about this story that's probably unknown.
Oh, it's gotten an extraordinary amount of press in Israel surrounding this. This kind of story really resonates with Israelis. The Israeli fighter pilots are viewed as our fighter pilots and our Delta and SEAL team folks. These are, you know, the elite. And so for the family, the victims, this is a good thing. The family feels that now there's been some attention paid to the murder of their dad, and I'm most proud of that.
You know, Fred, when I was reading through the book, I was, you know, kind of startled, you know, because when you were at Diplomatic Security Service, at DSS and State Department, I'm sure you had a lot on your plate anyway, and you didn't really have the time or maybe the resources or anything else to kind of just focus in on this case. You tried to reopen the case, and then you were met with some challenges. I mean, why was that the case? And it seems as if you did not really get it solved until you left the government, where you had a little bit more freedom to pursue this.
Well, you're absolutely correct. When you're playing inside the government arena, you literally have to color in between the lines. And for example, if I was back in my old job as a special agent, I just couldn't pick up the phone and call the victims in Israel without getting myself in trouble and getting the Israelis outraged that I'm reaching out to one of their citizens in an official capacity. So and I've had countless conversations with the family, and pretty much I can interview you know, scores of people surrounding this case that I never could have in my old job. And in many ways I was much more it was much more
your hands were tied.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, when you have to play by those kinds of handcuffs that are on you, you really have to move at a snail's pace. And and to be blunt, Derek, I'm not very proud of my efforts in the 80s. If I had been more diligent at looking at this at the time, a lot of these folks that we attempted to interview and find would have still been alive.
Hmm.
And you know, it's an easy excuse for me to say now that, well, we had too much work, too many other current attacks to deal with. But in reality, I probably took the path of least resistance at that time. And granted, there was only three of us in our counterterrorism unit, but I probably should have done a much better job then. So this case has kind of weighed on me for a long period of time.
And I know tomorrow you'll be at the Institute of World Politics talking about this at 4 o'clock. If people want to find out about it, it's iwp.edu. They can see Fred coming in at 4 o'clock talking about the book and talking about his efforts. But, Fred, before we go and have to close out, you know, when you became this private citizen, I mean, you know, people, and I know you said your wife thought you were crazy, and I was reading through the book that you had stuff all over the house, you know, in terms of your case. What was the, and not necessarily to give it away, but what was the kind of moment where you found that right nugget of information that was able to kind of close that case?
We were very successful in, again, identifying some old Palestinian terrorists that were able to drop the dime on who did it. And that wasn't surprising to me. They were proud of their efforts. They considered themselves at war with Israel, and Colonel Alon was just a casualty killed in action.
Hmm. So these guys, at some point in time, they probably were bragging. I mean, they were probably were saying, "Listen, you know, this is one of their kind of victory moments."
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Wow. The book is called Chasing Shadows. It's in the bookstores. You can find it on Amazon. You can find it at Barnes & Noble and other kind of places. It's called Chasing Shadows. It's by Fred Burton. It's a special agent's lifelong hunt to bring down a Cold War assassin to justice. Fred, thank you for coming on Fed Access.
Thank you so much for having me on.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch. Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.